Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, the 27th of August. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleague, analyst, Ezra Ginsberg.
I can't believe it's already August 27th.
Do you know what August 27th is, Ezra? The anniversary of August 27th.
I'm drawing a blank.
You're drawing a blank. 22 years ago today, probably right about this time, 22 years ago today, I became a man.
It's a good, I like that. Little bar mitzvah, Drew.
A little bar mitzvah anniversary. 22 years ago was my bar mitzvah, yeah. How about that?
That's a good time to have a bar mitzvah because it's the week before school starts.
That was part of, that was my dad's logic. Yeah. I mean, of course, being an August birthday, you sort of have it in and around your 13th birthday. But my dad thought, you know, do it sort of right before school starts because maybe the kids haven't seen each other all summer. They've been out at camp. They've been doing things with family, whatever it might be. Made for a pretty good party.
It's a perfect time to have a party. And Sheldon has always been a wise man.
A very wise man. And a good party guy. He likes to throw a good party. So, you know, the 23, it was 22 years ago today that we had a pretty good bash for my bar mitzvah.
All right. Now I know.
Yes.
It's like Drew Mandel trivia.
It's like Drew Mandel trivia. Yeah. And, you know, in future, you know, Rabbi Leibel could have officiated my bar mitzvah if things had played out a little bit differently and if he wasn't younger and everything else.
You know, Matt, you mentioned Matt Leibel.
Yeah. I got to give a salute to Matt.
We got to give a huge salute to Maddie. We're both actually related to Matthew Leibel. Matthew Leibel and I are second cousins. Our parents are actually first cousins. So I've known Matt Leibel for many years. And, you know, it's going to be a huge loss for the station. Matt's been around since the beginning of the station. So we wish him all the best in his future endeavors. And we're obviously going to still keep in very close contact with Matt.
Uh-huh.
But it's definitely going to be a big loss for the station. I mean, what are Westy and Brandon Ruwicki going to do now?
I assume they're going to be sitting Shiva, as is traditional. When you lose a member of the family, you know, you have to, you know, mourn his loss for a little while. But I'm sure that the show will go on without Maddie. But, of course, I echo your thoughts there about Maddie. And all the best to him as he gets on the road to a new adventure, as it were. Let's get back, you know, let's start with some hockey talk on this Saturday morning. And of course, what every Winnipeg Jets fan is still sort of concerned about to some extent would be the status of Jacob Trouba.
Drew, can we call this
no
Trouba anxiety?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Trouba gate. I was going to say this is definitely not a gate. But
no.
Yeah, you can say this is Trouba-induced anxiety, I would suspect.
We talked about this before. The gate has been so overused, like Lochte gate, for example. Everything's a gate.
Yeah, no, things have to be. There's no more.
There was one gate. It was Watergate.
That's right. It's not a gate. It's not a Ghazi. It's nothing along those lines. Exactly. No. This is just a contract dispute between Jacob Trouba and the Winnipeg Jets. Not even a dispute. I shouldn't even use the word dispute. It's a contract negotiation between Jacob Trouba and his representative, Kurt Overhart, and the Winnipeg Jets organization.
Drew, I know you want to get into Bill Waters' comments here earlier in the week on the roundtable. I think it's because it's the end of August.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of hockey to talk about.
Very little.
All of the other RFAs have signed for the Winnipeg Jets, mm-hmm. and people are starting to get a little bit nervous when it comes to Jacob Trouba and whether he's going to sign long-term with the Winnipeg Jets. And quite frankly, I still think he's going to sign a long-term deal with the Jets, but I think at this point in the summer, with the World Cup coming up, with training camp coming up, everybody's just getting a little bit nervous, and I think Winnipeg just needs to take a little bit of a collective sigh.
I think that part of the anxiety, I mean, I think, or probably a fair bit of the anxiety, is looking at the track record of Kurt Overhart, Jacob Trouba's agent. He certainly has a reputation, and that's his job, is to advocate for his client and do what his client wants. He has the reputation of playing hardball, and he has not been afraid to his clients have missed training camps before. They have missed regular season games. Ryan Johansson, of course, comes to mind, formerly of the Columbus Blue Jackets, now of the Nashville Predators. And we'll talk to Aaron Portsline later on in the show, and we can sort of address the lingering maybe aftermath of that negotiation back when Johansson was a member of the Blue Jackets. But Kurt Overhart has not been afraid to have his players not sign a contract until the season begins. And Jets fans who are flying high pretty much after an offseason that most would feel was pretty good, getting Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor leaves college, a lot of optimism. They say this team without Jacob Trouba, it has significant holes on the back end. And so I think there is some valid anxiety to the Winnipeg Jet, from the Winnipeg Jets fan base.
I think if you're in end of September, Drew,
mm-hmm.
then if you're a Jets fan or if you're Jets management, more importantly, you're getting a little bit nervous about whether you're actually going to be able to sign Jacob Trouba long term. But we just went through this. Well, we didn't just go through this, but 5 years ago, Zach Bogosian signed his bridge deal. Before he signed a seven-year deal, Zach Bogosian signed in September.
Mm-hmm.
Before the lockout, Evander Kane signed his six-year deal. Many people didn't think Evander Kane wanted to be here, right?
Yeah.
So Evander Kane signed the day before the lockout back in 2012, 2013. So I just wouldn't jump to any conclusions right now. I'm not saying that there's not a possibility that Jacob Trouba is traded, but right now there aren't any indications. There just haven't been any indications that he's going to be traded and not signed long-term. It's the end of August. You're talking about a player that's coming off of a poor year. I mean, Drew, we've talked about this for 3 months now. This negotiation was always going to be harder than Mark Scheifele.
Sure.
Mark Scheifele is arguably a future captain of the Winnipeg Jets. There was no doubt in anyone's mind that he was signing an eight-year deal. When it comes to Jacob Trouba, it's a little bit tougher. He wants to be paid Morgan Riley money. He wants to be paid
Jones money.
Right. He wants Seth Jones money. So he wants to be paid like a one or two defenseman. He wants to get those first or second line power play duties.
Mm-hmm.
We always knew it was going to be a little bit harder. So just wait till mid to late September, see where they're at then before you jump to any conclusions that Jacob Trouba isn't going to sign in Winnipeg.
You mentioned Bill Waters. Bill Waters was a guest of Rick Ralph's on the Don Vito Roundtable earlier this week. And Bill, who's certainly been around the NHL and the NHL world for probably close to two or three decades at this point in time, certainly an NHL lifer, had some interesting comments regarding Jacob Trouba and, you know, his long-term status here in Winnipeg. Here's the first part of Bill Waters. Clip number one, Rory, please.
With Trouba, I suspect that they want to leave Winnipeg. And he's hoping that he can force Winnipeg to move him.
So Bill Waters starts off the interview with Rick, or in the course of the interview with Rick, says asserts that he thinks that Trouba and Trouba's camp want out of Winnipeg. Let's start with that comment to begin with. Do you think that, you know, that is a valid and accurate reflection of where we're at right now?
Well, it's just speculation at this point.
Absolutely. And Bill's, you know, Bill's clearly just expressing, you know, what I guess what his opinion is and what he's hearing.
Right. And Drew, I've heard rumblings too from others outside of the Jets organization that maybe there was a trade in the works around the draft for Jacob Trouba, but that's, again, all speculation coming from outside of the Jets organization, right? So, again, I said it, you know, a couple of minutes ago. I'm not saying that there isn't a possibility that Jacob Trouba is traded. I personally don't think Jacob Trouba is going to be traded. I think they want to sign him long-term, and I think this whole notion that Jacob Trouba doesn't want to play in Winnipeg has been completely overblown. Like, when it comes to Evander Kane, I don't think he wanted to be here.
Oh, he clearly didn't want to be here.
He didn't want to be here. That was clear. He said it the way he acted on and off the ice.
Mm-hmm. We know now that he had requested, and that was
yes.
to nobody's surprise,
right.
He had requested multiple times each offseason
right.
to be traded outside of Winnipeg.
Right. And aside from Evander Kane, to the best of my knowledge, no player has ever requested to be traded.
Zach Bogosian did, after he was included in that trade, surprised a lot of people when he came out and said that he had requested a trade as well. He did so, obviously, very quietly because nobody knew that, but he, too, it turns out, had requested a trade out of Winnipeg.
Well, I think those were two different scenarios, though. I think Evander Kane had requested a trade for a long time, whereas Zach Bogosian, it was maybe closer to when the trade actually happened. But needless to say, maybe there are two players in the 5 year history of the Jets.
Let me interrupt you for a sec. How often do you think trade requests happen that we just don't know about? We being the media, we being the public.
Probably happens more often than you think.
I think it does too. I think oftentimes a player, you know, will, you know, go to a general manager or a player's representative will go to a general manager and say, you know, we wouldn't mind if you happen to explore what else, you know, other options for our player. They're not you know, they're not drawing a line in the sand necessarily saying we're not going to be here if a trade doesn't happen. But I bet you it happens way more than you think that players throughout the league, not just Winnipeg, this isn't a Winnipeg specific issue, that players throughout the league might have conversations where they say, you know, we are open to being traded.
Right. And I would imagine that most players don't want the fans and the media to know that they've requested a trade, because then they get a reputation for a player that really doesn't fit in with a certain team or really is maybe, let's say, high needs or something like that. So I think, yeah, you're right. It probably happens more often than we think. But again, going back to Jacob Trouba, I don't necessarily think that he wants out of Winnipeg. I think there's a lot of speculation. It's the end of August. He hasn't signed. Everybody right now, is, as I said, has a little bit of Trouba anxiety. So,
Rory, here's more of Bill Waters from this week's Don Vito Roundtable. Clip number two, Rory.
Well, I'm sure that in the course of the negotiation that trade request has been brought up. I don't think there's any question that that's a significant alternative.
Again, to the point of the trade request happening, because it just makes logical sense that Trouba's representatives would say, this is what our contract demands are. If you're not willing to meet them, then you should explore what the trade market might be for Jacob Trouba.
Right, Drew, but I think that would be the case in any negotiation, really.
I agree with you.
So I don't think that that's anything new there, right? But, you know, to what Bill Waters is saying, again, we don't know if Jacob Trouba and his camp have asked for a trade. We just don't know. There's nothing that has been reported that said that. And they obviously don't want anyone to know if that's the case, because then that hurts both sides' ability to find a trading partner, right? So,
well,
again,
you lose leverage at that point in time.
I think a trade is definitely an option, but if you ask me what the percent chances of that are happening, I would say it was low, because I think the Jets need to sign Jacob Trouba. They can't fill that role right now in their top four. I've said that all along, and I think right now they're just coming to an agreement on the amount of money he's going to make per year, how many years that is going to be. But right now, as far as all of the speculation goes, it's just that. It's speculation.
I think it's a very difficult time of the off season to make a significant trade, because that's what this would be. If you're trading a defenseman who's in his early 20s, you're talking about a significant trade. Most teams at this point in time are fairly locked into their rosters.
Yeah, but hold on, though, Drew. I mean, a guy like Jacob Trouba,
if he's on the market, teams are willing to
audible,
you're saying?
If he's on the market, I think it's less so the time of year, and it's more so the fact that the Jets want a left-shot defenseman in return. And I don't think that the Jets are interested in trading Jacob Trouba for a young forward, for example. Like, I don't think a Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson trade is what the Jets are looking for. The Jets have a lot of good young forwards coming into the system. You mentioned Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor.
Sure, there's a litany of, we know the young
Jack
forwards.
Jack Roslovic. Yeah, I mean, the Jets are strong on forward, and where they have the biggest weakness, and we've probably been saying this for 3 years now, is on the left side D. Because they've got Myers, they've got Buff, they've got Trouba right now. So if they trade Trouba, I think they want a defenseman coming back. And that is difficult to do, I think. We saw that with Travis Hamonic.
Sure. One final clip from Bill Waters earlier this week on the Don Vito Roundtable. Clip number three, Rory, please.
With a trade. He ends up with a trade. And that's why I say that's what this is all about. This is about extricating Trouba from Winnipeg in a fashion that doesn't reflect on Trouba.
The last part there about a fashion that doesn't reflect on Trouba, I'm gonna disagree with Bill on that one. I don't think the player really cares. You know, so if he's leaving Winnipeg and he's public enemy number, you think Evander Kane cares that he's public enemy number one in Winnipeg?
No,
I don't think he gives a damn about his reputation. Evander Kane's reputation, well, I mean, I think it speaks for itself based on what's happened in Buffalo over the course of the last 18 months. That's Evander Kane's reputation. I don't think he gives a damn if he's disliked in Winnipeg or if he's disliked in Buffalo, if things end up going further sour there. Players are players. They're going to play wherever they're liked, and if they're hated in 29 other cities, I don't think they give a damn if they're hated if they're disliked in one particular NHL city.
I would agree with you, Drew. And going back to what Bill Waters said in that interview with Rick, when you're talking about these negotiations, I don't think it's surprising that he hasn't signed yet. And I don't think that either you or I thought that he was going to sign in June or July. I think we knew that this was probably going to be drawn out because of, as you mentioned, Kurt Overhart's history playing hardball with his clients like Ryan Johansson. So let's wait until mid-September, close to the World Cup, after the World Cup. Let's see what happens. Because I think for now, there's no rush to get this deal done. But I do think he does stay in Winnipeg.
We will keep an eye on the situation, as you would expect, and we'll bring you the latest news here on TSN 1290. Team Canada, they lost two players this week. They replaced them with two others. Is Team Canada better with these new guys? We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca. Broken up by Demers. Now Couture trying to settle it. And he gets around Boschman in alone. And he scores! What a goal!
Logan Couture scoring for the San Jose Sharks. Fans of Team Canada in the upcoming World Cup of Hockey certainly hope that he'll be able to pop a few in the opposing net as he has replaced Jamie Benn on Team Canada for the World Cup of Hockey. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentists of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So Ezzy, here we are, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks away from the World Cup of Hockey, and Team Canada has to make two changes to their roster. Fortunately for Team Canada, they get Logan Couture in exchange for Jamie Benn. Jamie Benn, of course, suffered a core muscle injury earlier in the offseason when he was in training. He underwent surgery on July 14th. The expectation at the time was that he was going to be able to be back. I'm not the least bit surprised that he has bowed out of the World Cup of Hockey. There's no way the Dallas Stars wanted him to rush back, play for Team Canada, and potentially jeopardize his season for the Stars. So Jamie Benn is out. Logan Couture is in for Team Canada. And then on the back end, Duncan Keith, he is out as he continues to rehabilitate his right knee. He had some surgery. It was not 100%. He wants it to be 100% for the start of the NHL season. Duncan Keith is out on the back end. Jay Bouwmeester replaces him on defense. Which is a bigger loss, Jamie Benn or Duncan Keith?
That's a good question.
Well, that's why I'm here.
I mean, you're talking about one of the best forwards in the league.
Yeah, one of the best goal scorers,
I would
absolutely.
Say. The best defenseman in the league, with maybe the exception of Drew Doughty.
Sure.
I mean, Duncan Keith, a couple of years ago when Chicago won the Stanley Cup, he was head and shoulders the best defenseman in the NHL. I would probably say Duncan Keith, just because he plays half of the game, he plays in all situations. But then when you're talking about Jamie Benn, you're talking about one of the most elite goal scorers in the game today. So I think they're both losses, but when you look at who's replacing them, and I think it's funny, you know, of course, Doug Armstrong is the GM of Canada.
Uh-huh.
So his guy is Jay Bouwmeester. Well, but Jay Bouwmeester plays with Alex Pietrangelo. He used to play with Alex Pietrangelo. They've mixed them up a little bit over the years with Colton Parayko.
For the St. Louis Blues, you're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and it's funny, too, because you have a couple of Kings defensemen that are going to probably be paired up together with Jake Muzzin and Drew Doughty. So then you've got Jay Bouwmeester, left shot, paired up with Alex Pietrangelo, who's a right shot. So it makes a lot of sense. And, of course, Jay Bouwmeester played for Canada at the 2014 Olympics. So Jay Bouwmeester is an excellent defenseman. And he's played for Canada not only at the Olympics and at the World Championship level, the World Junior level. I mean, Jay Bouwmeester's a top defenseman in the NHL. And then when you're talking about Logan Couture, he's coming off leading the playoffs and scoring 30 points for the San Jose Sharks, going to the Stanley Cup Finals. So Logan Couture has always been one of those guys who's kind of been on the fringe of making those Olympic teams, right? So it's a good opportunity for Logan Couture. He's a guy who can play center, but he can also play wing. So I see Logan Couture as a guy that'll replace Jamie Benn on one of those top two lines. Like Jamie Benn, Drew, probably would have just naturally because he plays on the Dallas Stars, he probably would have played with Sagan.
Yeah.
So maybe they put Logan Couture on the left side with Tyler Sagan, right? And whoever they put on the right side.
Joe Thornton's also on that team, so there's some familiarity there with Jumbo Joe and, of course, Logan Couture.
Thornton usually played with Pavelski on the the Sharks. But
I know.
Yeah, sure, they put Couture with Thornton.
I'm sure that they know each other. But, you know, and I agree. I mean, I think that the loss of Keith is... You know, what's been so impressive about the Team Canada teams over the last Olympics and everything else is just simply that the other team never had the puck. The puck was never in Canada's zone because the defense would pick it up and take it out of the zone so quickly. There was complete and total puck control by Team Canada. You take Duncan Keith out of the lineup there. I mean, sure, Jay Bouwmeester is a more than adequate replacement, but he's not Duncan Keith. So I wonder how that's going to sort of change the dynamic a little bit. I don't think it's going to be a death knell by any stretch of the imagination for Team Canada's chances at the World Cup of Hockey. But I think that losing Duncan Keith and what he does on the back end and how quickly he transitions the play up the ice is probably more significant to some degree. Probably more significant than losing Jamie Benn just by the nature of the style Team Canada wants to play.
Right, Drew. And, you know, there are only really two teams that have the depth to afford the loss of a guy like Duncan Keith. When you're talking about Sweden, they're not going to have Nicholas Cronwall, so who steps in? Hampus Lindholm,
sure,
one of the best young defensemen in the game, right? So I think Canada and Sweden are the two favorites easily going into this tournament, mm-hmm, just because they have the most depth at defense and in goal.
When you're
talking about Sweden, you're talking about, of course, Erik Karlsson, you're talking about Oliver Ekman-Larsson, you're talking about Victor Hedman,
mm-hmm,
you're talking about Anton Strålman, Hampus Lindholm. I mean, Sweden, I think, with the exception of Canada, has the best defense. But to your point, I mean, you're losing Duncan Keith, but you've still got Drew Doughty. You've still got Shea Weber.
Well, would have you taken, I mean, you know, Bouwmeester was the guy they named. And I'm sure that Doug Armstrong's ties to Jay Bouwmeester had something to do with it. Of course, you know, we know that the lingering resentment that existed between Martin St. Louis and Steve Yzerman when St. Louis wasn't taken for Team Canada and that forced the trade to the Rangers back in 2010.
But also with Jay Bouwmeester, you're talking about a guy...
2014.
Not only does he play for St. Louis and he plays with Alex Pietrangelo...
Right.
He's played in the Olympics before. It's not like Jay Bouwmeester hasn't gotten there on merit, right?
Sure, but would you have taken Bouwmeester over Subban, over Mark Giordano, guys like that? I mean, was Bouwmeester the... Was he the right call, or is this sort of a situation where there is no right call versus wrong call? This is just sort of the call that Canada was most comfortable with.
I think it's the latter. And if you're talking about Mark Giordano and PK Subban, are they better defensemen than Jay Bouwmeester right now at this stage in their career? I would say yes. But when you're talking about Jay Bouwmeester's skating ability, for a guy who's in his early 30s, the guy is still one of the best skaters in the league. And he has that familiarity with Alex Pietrangelo, right? So I think that it's an excellent choice as a replacement for Duncan Keith. But absolutely, Drew, if you're asking me, should PK Subban be there? Should Mark Giordano be there? I mean, Mark Giordano is a top 10 defenseman in the league, and so is PK Subban. But there are only 8 spots for defensemen, right?
Yeah.
So someone is
7, actually. But
sorry, 7. So there's going to be more than one good player left off of this list, right?
And that's, you know,
guy like Brent Burns, for example, right? He didn't make the last Olympic team,
right? But made this Team Canada.
Brent Burns had 75 points this past season. How could they keep Brent Burns off of this team, right? So someone is going to get left out. There's only 7 spots.
Well, it's the old joke or the old comment that, you know, Team Canada's greatest opponent would be a second Team Canada, because and it's relatively true, because it's hard to believe that, you know, guys of Jay Bouwmeester's ilk and of Logan Couture's ilk didn't make the team from the outset. Same with Mark Giordano, same with PK Subban. I mean, you look at the roster that Team Canada could put out there on a regular basis, and it's dynamic, to say the least.
Right, and so if you're Team Canada and you lose Jamie Benn, that's the thing with Team Canada, though. That's why they have always been the best hockey nation, with the exception of, you know, a few countries taking, you know, the reins for a little while, my opinion. It's because you can lose a Sidney Crosby, you can lose a Jamie Benn, you're still going to have a Tyler Seguin, you're still going to have a Jonathan Toews,
sure,
you're still going to have a Joe Thornton there. There are so many good players that are just waiting there to take the spot. Guys that are basically superstars in the NHL, and Canada always seems to have more of those guys. Sure, other countries, the U.S. is caught up, and I shouldn't say that the U.S. doesn't have a chance of winning here. I think they'd be better off if they had a guy like Johnny Gaudreau on their team. But if you're talking about the U.S., they still have got dynamic players like Patrick Kane. They've still got Zach Parise, Joe Pavelski, who was one of the top goal scorers in the league, Derek Stepan, Blake Wheeler, of course.
I'd be surprised.
The U.S. is a good team. Yeah. You look at their defense, I just don't think it's as strong as Canada's or Sweden's.
No, if they lose a player, it's the drop-off between that player and the next player is more significant than it is for Team Canada. I mean, Sweden, they made two roster changes this week. You mentioned that Nicholas Cronwall is not able to go. Hampus Lindholm of the Anaheim Ducks will take his spot. Lindholm, a great up-and-coming defenseman for the Ducks, very underrated back end they have in Anaheim, and he's going to fit in seamlessly Sweden, right, without a contract too. He's an RFA. Robin Lehner is out in net. Jonas Enroth is in. That's not a big deal because Jonas Enroth and Robin Lehner are going as the third string goaltenders, of course, behind Henrik Lundqvist and Jakob Markstrom. You won't see those guys on the ice very much. It won't be an issue for Team Sweden there.
Right, and the last World Cup, you had Finland versus Canada in the final, so Finland is always going to be competitive. But when you look at the team top to bottom, Canada and Sweden are, in my opinion, head and shoulders above the rest of the competition. And that's, no offense to U.S., Finland, Russia. I just think, and you could look at the 2014 Olympics. What was the final? Canada versus Sweden. So sure. I would expect that to be the final this time around.
Best of three this time.
I think North America is going to be exciting. I think Team Europe is going to be exciting. But I just don't know if those teams are going to be able to gel together as quickly as these other teams, especially when you're talking about a lot of these guys that are on Team Canada have played together at the Olympics, at the World Juniors and stuff like that.
A lot of familiarity, of course. And Team Canada, nobody's surprised, named Sidney Crosby as the captain for the team earlier this week. Jonathan Toews and Shea Weber were named as the alternates. I think that's pretty much a no-brainer.
Yeah, how can you not name Sidney Crosby the captain after he just won the Stanley Cup? Mm-hmm. He was the captain in Sochi. I don't think you have a
captain
choice.
Captain in Vancouver. I mean, Everything else. It's Sidney Crosby's job as long as he's on the team.
He's the best player in the world right now.
Yeah.
Maybe Connor McDavid is going to be the best player in the world a year or two from now, but right now it's still Sidney Crosby.
Until you beat the king, it's all hail King Crosby. Michael Trakos is going to join us next. We're going to ask Michael about if the Jays are in a pennant chase, if they're in a pennant race when the World Cup of Hockey starts, is there a risk that the World Cup is going to be overshadowed in Toronto? We'll talk to Michael Trakos of Post Media Network next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Brewer back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
9:30 Saturday morning, the 27th of August. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mundell and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the program our very good friend, Michael Trakos. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media News. Michael, good morning, and how are you, good friend?
Hey, greetings from Toronto, boys. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Mike?
Doing fine. That's weather good. Again. I don't know how it is out there, but geez, what a summer we're having, and continuing today, just a gorgeous day.
Okay, that's good to hear. So I was going to ask you, it's been a good summer. You've been able to relax a little bit, kick your feet up a little bit, chase after the kids a bit.
Oh, yeah, and my golf game hasn't gotten better, but not from a lack of trying.
No, but have you been drinking beer on the golf course better?
Yes, that's gotten better. Okay. I've become more efficient in that regard.
That's good. That's really what the importance of it all about. Mike, I wanted to start with this, and we're just going to go sort of around the world of hockey. We haven't spoken to you this summer. The Jays. I was just saying to Ezzy, before in the last segment, the Jays are in the midst of this pennant race, battling with the Red Sox and the Orioles for the AL East crown. They fortunately are still up in the wild card chase, but mid-September rolls around. If the Jays are still in a dogfight for the AL East and the World Cup of Hockey is getting underway in Toronto, is there a possibility, is there a likelihood that the World Cup of Hockey might get overshadowed in Toronto by this Jays pennant race?
Oh, it's 100% true. And it's not if the games are going to matter for the Jays, because I think it's going to come down to the final series of the regular season for them. I do believe they've got, if I recall correctly, I think they've got something like the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Orioles as their final three series of the season, and the final series of the season basically coincides with, I think, the gold medal game for the World Cup of Hockey. So that season is going to determine for the Jays whether they win the division, whether they're a first wildcard team, a second wildcard team, or whatever. But the games are probably going to matter more often than not. So it's going to be tough because I know in Toronto, everyone's just living and dying by every win or loss, and even a series like against the Minnesota Twins where you're thinking, okay, well, the Twins have nothing in stake for this, but it's still, that's all everyone's talking about. So it will be really interesting to see if people are going to tune into, say, Canada versus the Czech Republic or something like that, or if they're going to be more interested in just the Jays game, and it's probably going to be the Jays. So, you know, like Gary Bettman, Don Fehr and company, they got their hands full because when you're going up against meaningful baseball and it doesn't come around every year in Toronto, people are going to tune into that versus what's looking at like a cash grab type exhibition tournament.
Michael, you had a really good piece earlier in the week, five reasons why PK Subban was left off of Team Canada's World Cup roster again. Of course, we were talking about it last segment. Jay Bouwmeester replaces Duncan Keith. Jay Bouwmeester plays on the left side. And, of course, he's played with Alex Pietrangelo, who plays on the right side. I guess, how surprised are you that a guy who just won the Norris Trophy 3 years ago was left off of Team Canada's roster again?
I'm almost more surprised at a guy like Chris Letang, who I thought was arguably one of the best defensemen in the entire NHL playoffs, was left off the roster. And no one's really talking about Letang, but the reasons why Subban was left off are the same reasons why Letang was left off. They don't shoot the right way. Mike Babcock is in love with the lefty-righty matchup for whatever reason. You don't see that same really kind of obsessiveness from Sweden or any other countries. They basically take the best defenseman available, and if one guy goes down, they take the next guy in order, regardless if he's a left-shooting guy or right-shooting guy. They don't care about that matchup. But if Mike Babcock's going to go that way, basically it's going to take a guy who shoots right for Subban to get in, or a Letang to get in. And you know what? If it had been a right-shooting guy went down, I almost think the Team Canada brass is going to lean towards Letang over Subban. But I outlined the other reasons, and a lot of them kind of make logical sense. Like Jay Bouwmeester is probably not the same defenseman as a PK Subban is, but you know, he's got the benefit of playing for St. Louis, where he's got chemistry with Alex Pietrangelo, and those guys are probably going to be a likely pair. Team Canada knows him, and more importantly, his GM in St. Louis is the same guy who's the GM for Team Canada's selection team. So when you've got that, when your boss is picking the team, more likely than not, he's going to err on the guy that he's familiar with. So it's unfortunate because I think a lot of people think that PK Subban is this polarizing figure, and Canada doesn't want him. Obviously, Montreal didn't want him. But I think it goes deeper than just kind of, well, we just don't like the person. There are some hockey reasons involved.
Yeah, Mike, and maybe does it have something to do with the fact that PK Subban is more of an offensive-minded defenseman, and they have guys like Drew Doughty and Brent Burns, and maybe they feel like they wanted more of a defensive defenseman?
Yeah, that's true. And you know, Mike Babcock is such a safe coach. He really wants to know what he's getting out there, whether it's for forwards or defensemen. And I think Subban is, you could consider him maybe a bit of a wild card where you don't exactly know what you're getting every time he's on the ice. With a guy like Jay Bouwmeester, he's not going to put up crazy amount of points. He's not going to rush the puck up the ice single-handedly, but he's going to provide you safe minutes. And I think in this kind of tournament, they'll take safe over that kind of high-end risky play any day of the week.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media Network. Michael, how good are the Arizona Coyotes going to be this year with Pavel Datsyuk, Chris Pronger, and Dave Boland?
Oh, man, that's a Hall of Fame line right there. you know, how good are they going to be 4 years from now or maybe even 3 years from now? And the answer is they're going to be pretty darn good.
Yeah.
This is a team that is just loaded. The cupboards are basically overflowing with top-end prospects. And my boys at the Hockey News named these guys the top, basically the top team in their Future Watch magazine in terms of how good their prospect depth is. And that was before they traded for, you mentioned Dave Boland, and also Lawson Krause came in that deal. Yeah. So, and I think that was also before they got a guy like Jacob Chychrun in the draft, which came in that Datsyuk trade, and they drafted Clayton Keller. So, You got Dylan Strome possibly coming onto the team this year. You got Max Domi. You got Anthony DeClaire. You got Oliver Ekman-Larsson. You've got Christian Dvorak. You've got a lot of good young players coming up in that system. So they're doing things the right way. General manager John Chayka has found almost, I'd say, like a loophole in the CBA where he's taking on dead contracts, contracts that teams just can't afford to keep. And he's saying, you know what, we've got cap space. We'll take on your problems. Just throw us a top-end prospect or a high draft pick, and the deal will get done. So Arizona's benefiting, and, you know, this could be good for hockey. I think success in the desert is going to really depend on how successful that team is. And the way that they're building it with all these star young talent, it should be interesting to watch.
Well, the blood feud between the Las Vegas Desert Knights or whatever the hell they're called and the Arizona Coyotes is going to be a legendary one. But, you know, to your point there, Michael, about the Coyotes properly using the cap space, why do the Coyotes appear to be the only NHL team willing to do this? I mean, we saw it a little bit with Carolina in taking on Brian Bickle's contract and getting Tuvo Teravainen from the Blackhawks. But why aren't more teams being, you know, using the cap space like the as an asset like it is?
Yeah, you know what? I think a lot of teams are in a position where they just can't afford to have a guy like Dave Bolin take up $5.5 million for the next 3 years because they want to use that cap space to actually fill out their roster. Arizona is at a different stage in their kind of team development where they're saying, you know, well, we're not going to be competitive probably for 3 years. We're not going to be using that cap space on players that can take us over the edge. Basically, they have so many guys who are going to be on entry-level contracts where that $5.5 million is just kind of, they could just live with it. So a team like Toronto, I don't know why they're not more involved in those kind of deals because especially with where they're at with the young guys coming up, Matthews and Marner and Nylander, there's not a lot of big money on the books there. So you mentioned Carolina, and they were kind of in the same kind of boat that a team like Arizona is in. So, you know, don't be surprised if some more bottom feeders kind of go this route. But I'm just curious as to whether the NHL is going to kind of step in because it is kind of funny that a guy like Chris Pronger still on the books for them or still technically on their roster, and yet he's already in the Hall of Fame.
It sounds like a negotiation for the 2020 CBA.
Oh, that's going to be so much fun. I think the listeners just can't wait for that to happen.
Can't wait. It's going to be exciting, that lockout.
Don't say that word. Michael, when it comes to the Florida Panthers, and they've definitely been one of the most active teams when it comes to on the ice and both off the ice and on the ice, I should say, and they just won the Atlantic Division and had a very surprising year for a team that the previous year missed the playoffs. When it comes to all the moves they've made, and I should say I like most of the moves they've made, especially on defense, getting Jason Demers and, of course, trading for Keith Yandel. Do you think it's possible that they've maybe made too many moves?
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, that's still like a young, developing team. And I think there's going to be so many moving pieces just with how their players develop internally that you can add a lot and not necessarily worry. It's not like this is an older team where you're going, okay, well, the same 30-year-olds are used to playing with each other. And when you're talking about guys like Ekblad and Huberdeau and Trochuk and Barkov back there, they're going to be growing and changing their roles as they continue to get better. So, yeah, I'm not too overly worried. I do think they needed some infusion of youth because, as we saw in that playoff series, a lot of their older guys, that was really the difference maker, is those guys were petering out, whereas the young guys still had legs to keep going.
Michael Trakos joins us on Illegal Curve. Michael obviously is the national hockey writer for Post Media Network. Michael, Austin Matthews, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask about him. I believe we're contractually obligated to ask any Toronto-based writer about him. Austin Matthews won't be at the Leafs rookie camp. He won't necessarily be at Leafs training camp for all of it, of course, because he's playing in the World Cup of Hockey. Is the fact that he's sort of maybe able to avoid the spotlight a little bit going to benefit him in his rookie season?
I think so. It's going to come, though, because at the World Cup, like, I'm going to be covering that Young Stars team, whatever you want to call them,
sure.
The Barely Legals. And I'm going to be asking. I've already been talking to my editor. He's like, yeah, so we're expecting an Austin Matthews story of some sort every day, right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm guessing that's what you want. Because whether he's playing in Toronto for their training camp or if he's out in Quebec City or Montreal at the Young Stars training camp, he's going to get attention. And maybe the spotlight is going to be somewhat less brighter out at the World Cup, but there's still going to be that focus, and he's still going to be the focal point, especially with the tournament happening in Toronto. But what I think happens, and this is probably good for Austin Matthews, is that by the time the actual NHL regular season starts, he'll have already played a couple weeks of hockey and almost gotten everything out of his system in terms of maybe kind of that initial, I don't want to say like a hurdle of playing against pros, but basically he'll almost be on the ground running. And the same thing with Patrick Laine. I think this is going to benefit both of them in their rookie years. We saw with McDavid last year, it almost took him a full month before he got up to speed, and then he had the devastating injury. So if that's true of Matthews and Laine, by the time the regular season starts, these guys should be already in top form.
Mike, it's been over a week now since Jimmy Vesey signed with the New York Rangers. Have Toronto Maple Leafs fans gotten over the fact that they didn't get Jimmy Vesey? Because a lot of people thought Jimmy Vesey might sign in Toronto because his dad is an amateur scout and they drafted his brother.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the release that Jimmy Vesey's dad has been released. They've traded his brother as well. But, yeah, you know what? I don't know about you guys. I was kind of surprised that New York ended up winning the bidding war there. Yeah. You would have thought if it's not Toronto, it was going to be possibly Chicago or Boston. And to go to the Rangers didn't make a whole lot of sense when you're looking at why a young player would want to join a team. But, yeah, I think Toronto fans, they've been kind of lucky in the last couple years. Like, they won the Mike Babcock sweepstakes. They ended up winning the first overall pick and getting Austin Matthews. So, you know what? And they also are hosting the World Cup. So, you know what? Toronto can live with that one thing that they haven't won so far.
Michael, we'll let you go on this last question. Mark Hunter was formerly the director of player personnel for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's now the assistant general manager. Is that a pretty clear sign that he is Lou Lamoriello's heir apparent in the hierarchy that is in the bloated hierarchy that is the Toronto Maple Leafs organization?
I would think so. In the same way, Lou Lamoriello's got 2 years remaining on his contract, and don't be surprised after those 2 years if he signs another 3-year deal or something. Because Lou Lamoriello just doesn't go away. But this is I think the Leafs are looking at that succession plan, and whether it's a guy like Mark Hunter or, you know, Kyle Dubas could also be in the running for that position as well, just because of his age and what he brings to the team as well. But Toronto, they just keep accumulating their guys in the brain trust, and it seems like everyone has got so many different roles that there's not one clear leader, and maybe that's a good thing for this Leaf team, because in the past when they've had one guy running the ship, we've seen how that goes.
Michael Trakos is the national hockey writer for Post Media News. He joins us this morning from Toronto. Michael, appreciate your time, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
We'll do it again soon.
Cheers, Michael.
Let's head to break. When we return, the name Jared Bednar might not mean much to you. It'll mean more as the season unfolds. We'll tell you about him next on Illegal Curve Radio on TSN 1290.
You're on The Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Got the news that I've been offered the position. So exciting time for myself and my family, and really looking forward to getting out there and getting to work in Denver. I think first off, I think the style of play that we played in Cleveland last year, I see it as a good fit for the Avalanche. There's a real good staff in place there in Colorado, and I'm going to rely heavily on their expertise and their experience, and in order to help us get this team playing the way I'd like it to play.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, that is new Colorado Avalanche head coach Jared Bednar speaking to NHL Network. He's named as the Avs' new head coach after Patrick Waugh resigned earlier this month in a bit of a hissy fit. But welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their new location, conveniently located on the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Check them out, Keener Jerseys.
Drew, as you know, I've been to the new location several times.
You're actually living there now in the back of the store. They set up a cot for you, I understand.
It's absolutely beautiful. Uh-huh. Go check it out. They've got all the jerseys up there for fans to look at. By the way, just as an aside, you know, Keener Jerseys read makes me think of, please tell me that you've seen this robbery that took place in Russell with one of the guys dressed up in goalie gear.
One of the guys named Ezra G, or that's a little too obvious. Let's go with E. Ginsburg. I was going to ask you, where did you actually get the goalie gear? You're not a goalie traditionally.
Yeah, I never put on the goaltending equipment. No. Like, I remember when I was playing community center house league hockey when I was like 9 or 10, every kid has to put the pads on. I hated it, but that video was probably the funniest video I've ever seen. Seeing that guy run across the surveillance footage in that goalie equipment, but he has the stick too.
I can't believe that.
Why did he need the stick?
Well, I can't believe that it's real.
It's real.
I know it's real, but it seems to me like it's like some sort of publicity stunt for something, because it's so bizarre and so off the wall and doesn't make any sense whatsoever that it just seems like, I know if you're breaking and entering to steal beer, you're probably not that smart to begin with. So, you know, it's just hard to, I guess, you know, if you're not that smart, you're not that smart. So maybe you are just, you know, maybe, this is just your logic that if you need beer that badly that you're going to commit a crime to get it, I guess, you know, sure.
Well, these guys had probably already had 20 beers each before, because that's what they needed more beer. That's why they were there.
Why was he still wearing his gear?
It's amazing.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. That's the thing. I mean, that's why I can't believe that there's people. I readily admit that there obviously are people that stupid, but I just rather never meet them.
Like when
want people to be that stupid to just go live on their own island somewhere where they can't cause any damage and can't cause any trouble for anyone else.
But Drew, you're forgetting how funny this is.
You know, it's funny.
Like when the police put out the wanted poster, is it going to be like a sketch of a goaltender with?
it's actually just, you know, the old goaltender that when you'd be shooting by yourself, I forget what the goaltender that you'd lace him up into the net. What was his name?
Shooter Tutor.
It's going to be a Shooter Tutor. That's who everyone's looking for. As I found him, he's attached to a net.
No, that's an inanimate object.
Yes, exactly.
That's a Shooter Tutor.
The whole thing is absolutely one of the more bizarre things that you're going to see.
Maybe he was wearing a Keener jersey.
I hope not. I mean, Keener would never be involved in anything along those lines.
No, I mean, he wouldn't be involved in it. The goaltender was wearing a jersey that he got from Keener jerseys.
Maybe he is. Let's talk about Jared Bednar. He's the new Colorado Avalanche head coach. You know, obviously this was a sort of a bizarre circumstance to begin with. Patrick Waugh quitting in the middle of August, sort of unheard of in the realm of the NHL.
Well, just is coaches, this a good coaches quitting in general. In any sport,
doesn't happen very often
because these are such coveted positions, right?
Right. So the Avalanche go out and they hire Lake Erie Monsters head coach Jared Bednar. Obviously, Lake Erie won the AHL, the Calder Cup last year. You know, given the circumstances, is this a pretty decent hire for the Avalanche?
Well, first off, he's a good Saskatchewan boy from Yorkton.
Sure.
He's a guy that never played in the NHL. He was a career minor leaguer, and he's worked his way up through the ranks. He won a ECHL championship with the South Carolina Stingrays. And as you mentioned, he won the Calder Cup last year with the Lake Erie Monsters, now the Cleveland Monsters, the AHL affiliate of the Columbus Blue Jackets. So this is a guy who's won at every minor pro level. And as you mentioned, there are connections. Nolan Pratt was hired by the Colorado Avalanche as an assistant before Patrick Waugh was fired. So I'd imagine Nolan Pratt stays on as an assistant coach with Jared Bednar.
No, let me just interrupt you. Nolan Pratt was
former NHL defenseman.
Yeah. He was one of Bednar's assistants with the Lake Erie Monsters. Pratt, so that's the tie there.
I think Pratt was mainly on the Lightning, if I remember correctly.
He also played for the Avs as well.
He played on a few teams, four or five teams, but he was, I think, broke into the league with the Lightning, or definitely played a few years with the Lightning, if I remember correctly. But certainly there are connections there.
He played for the Hurricanes. He played for the Avs. He played 5 years with the Lightning. He played with the Sabres, and then he finished his career both in the KHL and in Sweden.
So it makes sense, Drew, that Nolan Pratt was a coach down in Lake Erie, and they bring up Jared Bednar. Similar to, if you want to use Jeff Blashill in Detroit after Mike Babcock left. I mean, there are, I think Patrick Williams tweeted about this recently. I think there are 22 of 30 coaches right now in the NHL that have AHL experience. So, I mean, AHL coaches being promoted to the NHL isn't uncommon. And if you look at who Joe Sakic won the Stanley Cup with in the Colorado Avalanche organization, both of those coaches came from the AHL. So you're talking about Bob Hartley.
Sure.
And you're talking about Mark Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those guys were new NHL coaches when they won the Stanley Cup. So Joe Sakic is not afraid to hire a coach here that doesn't have NHL experience. Lane Lambert was another guy who was in contention. He's the assistant with Washington. Travis Green, who's the coach of Utica, he was another guy that was in contention here. So they were clearly going, Drew, with a newbie NHL coach. This guy from, I don't know a lot about Jared Bednar aside from what I've heard and read, but he's a guy that has a very good reputation. John Tortorella spoke very highly of him, and we'll talk to Aaron Portsline in about half an hour about him because he was in the Columbus organization, but certainly a detail-oriented guy, a very bright hockey mind, and kind of one of those coaches that's part of the new school wave of hockey coaches, a guy that likes to play the puck possession, quick-paced, fast, aggressive forecheck type of game, and he's a guy that's obviously had a lot of success at the minor league level, so it remains to be seen how well he does, you know, in his first year with the Colorado Avalanche.
It's almost a free year in that because it was such a
I don't think they're making the playoffs this year.
No, I don't think they're making the playoffs either, but it's almost...
The defense just isn't good enough.
Right, but there's very little pressure on him for that first year because he gets hired so late in August. It's sort of like almost like, yeah, we know there's going to be a learning curve here and we didn't really allow for it or we didn't let you prepare for it so well because we didn't know we needed to hire
He's
you.
He's not coming into an organization that thinks they're going to win the Stanley Cup this year.
And getting hired on August 25th sort of gives you a bit of a pass in order to get your legs under you. So he's able to learn on the job a little more than, say, a coach who's hired, you know, when their season ends, you know, be it in April or May. He has a steep learning curve ahead of him, but it's almost at the same time he gets a little bit of a free pass.
Right, and also another thing to mention, too, he's worked with some of the young Avalanche prospects. So he's familiar with some of these players, and now he goes to the NHL along with Nolan Pratt, and he's able to coach those players. So I think that has something to do with it. Look at John Cooper, who coached Norfolk before he became the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, I mean, that's the trajectory in pro hockey, right?
Yeah.
You pay your dues in the ECHL, the AHL, and you wait for that opportunity, and that's why I think Jarmo Kekalainen didn't stand in his way.
It's professional courtesy for a guy who's going to make a jump from an AHL head coach to an NHL head coach that, sure, the Blue Jackets organization could have been... That puts them a little bit behind the eight ball in that they now have to go find a new AHL head coach. But you're not going to stand in the way of a guy getting a promotion to the NHL.
This
is
his dream job, right?
Sure.
That's what every coach wants to be. Everybody wants to be in the NHL.
Yeah.
And he's been given his opportunity here in his early 40s. And, you know, it's great for him.
Yeah. Final word on this goes to Trent Vogelhuber, another not a very household name.
That's a great name, by the way.
Played for Jared Bednar last season in Cleveland. He just signed a two-way free agent contract with the Colorado Avalanche. Here's Vogelhuber, quote, "I definitely describe him as a player's coach. He's a great balance of somebody you can talk to and talk to comfortably, not just as your coach, but as a peer. But he can definitely be stern and disciplined, and he's a smart situational coach. I don't know any player who played for him the last couple of years that would say anything bad about him." Jared Bednar hired as the new coach of the Colorado Avalanche. Coming up next, Harvey Fialkov joins us to talk about the Florida Panthers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number two, coming up here on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
It was caught a little off guard, but that's what it is sometimes. And I'm looking forward to getting to Arizona and really showing them what I'm made of. And I look at it as another opportunity to prove myself. And it's my first time in my entire career being traded. And it was a lot of things were going through my mind at the time. But now that I've had the last couple hours to reflect on it, I'm in a really good spot. And like I said, I'm really looking forward to getting there and showing them what I'm made of.
That's former member of the Florida Panthers, Lawson Krause. He was traded earlier this week to the Arizona Coyotes. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
To talk more about the Lawson Krause trade and the offseason in general, we're pleased to welcome to the program Harvey Fialkov of the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Harvey, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
How are you, Harvey?
Well, I was about to get on the tennis court. I kind of forgot about this, but let's rock and roll.
Attaboy. You got any U.S. Open favorites? It gets underway on Monday. We'll start with the tennis talk first.
Yeah, well, I'm a tennis nut, but I really think it's more wide open than usual, guys. Djokovic coming off, he has a wrist injury, a little bit of loss of confidence. That's an amazing first half. Murray's the hot one right now with Olympic gold, Wimbledon. But he's also maybe a little bit gassed. The Cincinnati final, he lost to Cilic. So I think it's more open than usual. You could have some sleepers. Hopefully, guys, Del Potro and Dimitrov. Nishikori may have some shots. But obviously, Djokovic is the favorite. It's healthy. On the women's side, listen, Serena's got a sore shoulder. Her number one weapon is the serve. And she looked pretty pitiful in Rio and pulled out of, I believe, Cincinnati. So she's also coming off a rusty layup. But again, she's the overwhelming favorite going in. It's a very weak women's tour right now. Venus is ranked sixth. She's 36 and hasn't won anything in years. But that tells you right there how diluted the women's game is. Radwanska, I think I can hit with Radwanska. She's a top 10 player. So I'm pulling for Monica Puig, the Olympic hero from Puerto Rico, who actually trains in Boca Raton. I just did a story on her. And maybe a sleeper, Madison Keys, also a transplant living in Boca. Big hitter, kind of like Lindsay Davenport. She can have a breakthrough. And then Sloan Stephens pulled out, so she's out of it. So I'm gonna go for Madison Keys as my dark horse.
Hold on, Harvey. What's going on with Eugenie Bouchard, though?
Yeah, you forgot to mention Jeannie Bouchard and Milos Raonic. You're on in Canada, Harvey. Come on.
She used to train for years at my facility in Plantation, Florida, with Nick Saviano. Mm-hmm. That's when she had a breakthrough. She made an amazing year with the Grand Slam about 2-3 years ago. And ever since then, fame and fortune and got a hold of her, and she stopped training as hard. But now she's trying to make a little mini comeback. But she beat Sloan in the Olympics, but did nothing after that. I think she needs to get back to Nick Saviano because that's when she was at her best. She's got all the tools, guys. No serve, but great ground grain. We just got to see if she can get that fire in the belly.
From the hard court to the ice rink, Harvey, the Florida Panthers, certainly a very busy offseason, continued this past week when they shipped out Dave Boland and Logan Krause to the Arizona Coyotes.
Lawson Krause.
Pardon me, Lawson Krause to the Arizona Coyotes right. For a couple of draft picks. Want to start, I mean, obviously Boland is a long-term injury candidate, and he's going to be out of the lineup for the foreseeable future. I want to start with Lawson Krause. There's been a lot of sort of disagreement over, you know, what kind of player he's going to materialize into. From watching him, is he a guy who's, you know, a top six forward, or is he a guy who's more of a bottom six guy going forward for the Arizona Coyotes organization?
Well, obviously when they drafted him, they were picking up the top six, and right. Suddenly they developed depth with these young guys making breakthroughs like Trocheck and Huberdeau and Barkov. And then he really didn't really dominate in the OHL. Pretty decent numbers. I think he had 62 points in 49 games. But, you know, he came to development camp here. He hasn't really stood out. The other young prospects have stood out. This kid, Dryden Hunt. And I think Kyle Rau is ahead of him now. And I don't think he would have made the team, guys. And being 19, he would have had to go back to juniors and beat up some little kids, slow his development. He was still a minimum 2 years away. The Panthers want to win now. And they have a solid top six, and now they have a pretty good bottom six once they got Colton Skevier and John Marchessault from Tampa. So they really feel like they are ready to roll, and now they have extra cap money, around $10 million, to pick up some midseason help if somebody's slumping or gets injured. And, but God, to get rid of that albatross of a contract that Dale Fallon signed with Dave Boland, that's just a win-win-win-win-win situation.
Harvey, you mentioned that the Panthers are in win-now mode, and they've got some other young forward prospects that maybe are ahead of Lawson Crouse, but regardless, they probably didn't want to give Lawson Crouse up, 11th overall pick. He still had a high upside, but was this just the cost of unloading Bolin's contract on the Arizona Coyotes, who have been known for taking contracts, whether that's Datsyuk, yeah, Pronger?
Well, the Panthers almost went for Bolin for Datsyuk before Arizona did it. That was being discussed very heatedly during the season, but it didn't come to fruition. Listen, guys, it's always a crapshoot with these draft picks. They love this kid. He's a big physical forward. He has put the puck in the net. The Panthers lack a little bit of physical toughness now once they got rid of DeBronson. And Sean Thornton is near the end of his days, so they could get pushed around this year. They're looking for more speedy and mobile defensemen and forwards that could put, could snipe. And Crouse was just not there yet. Could he be there in 2-3 years? Yes. But like you said, this is a win-now situation for the Panthers. They're putting all their eggs in the basket. Luongo's running out of years coming off hip surgery. And Yager maybe have one more big year left in that 44-year-old amazing body. So the Panthers, they were not happy with that first round ousted by the Islanders, even though they still should be playing because Trocheck was tripped in game 6. it's all about now. They want to build that fan base, keep the buzz going. The Dolphins are going to suck. The Marlins aren't going to make the playoffs. Right now, it could be a Panther town if they start dominating this winter.
Yeah, the Dolphins sucking is not what I would describe as news, Harvey, but that seems to be a yearly thing, but that's a separate issue altogether. Harvey Fialkov of the South Florida Sun Sentinel joins us talking about the Florida Panthers. You mentioned Dale Tallon, Harvey, and we know that publicly everybody has said the right things. What is his role? Is he making decisions? Is he in the room when decisions are being made? And if he's not in the room, how long is he going to be satisfied sort of being on the sidelines of the Panthers organization? Or does he still have the itch to really be a decision maker for an NHL franchise?
This is a tough one, guys. I want to get along with everybody. Uh-huh. And you don't want to build your gut. But listen, Dale Tallon built this hockey team just like he built the Blackhawks. And they are stocked for years to come. And the owners are committed, and they were committed to Dale and the team by extending all these young players for many, many years. It was a surprise when they kind of pulled the blanket out from under him and promoted him, as they say, to president of hockey ops. Because Tom Rowe is Dale's guy. He brought him into the organization. So it was a surprise. But listen, Dale never liked the contract stuff. That got him in trouble in Chicago with the cap. He loves, even during the playoffs, he was out at the final Frozen Four. He during the season, he'll just leave it on a whim to some God-forsaken place. And I don't know, I don't want to say it, I mean, well, you're Canadian, but he loves finding new young talent. So maybe he is happy with the whole thing. So, and they pay very well. This ownership gave him an extension last year. So he's got 3 full years. What's going on? So I think Dale wants to see it to the end and get that cup. So, I believe Tallon is satisfied. Is he thrilled with it? No. It's all about analytics these days, and these young kids are making the move. So we'll see what happens down the road. If Vegas offered him the GM job, I think he would have taken it.
Harvey, you mentioned some of the moves the Panthers have made this offseason, and there's definitely a lot of them. I really like what the Panthers have done on defense. You mentioned they traded Eric Gudbranson to Vancouver for Jared McCann. They lost Brian Campbell, of course, who signed with the Chicago Blackhawks. But trading for and signing Keith Yandle, signing free agent defenseman Jason Demers, a really underrated defenseman in my opinion, and then, of course, signing Aaron Ekblad, former first overall pick in 2015, to an 8-year contract extension. When you look at that defense with Yandle, Demers, Aaron Ekblad, Mike Matheson, Alex Petrovic, can we say that this is a bona fide top 10 defense in the NHL now?
Hey, listen, they were top 10 last year without some of those guys, and I think they improved. Yandle, Brian Campbell, only 10 years younger. And Demers, like you said, is very unheralded. He's a two-way guy. They wanted more offense out of their back end. DeBronson couldn't find the net, with a GPS. Petrovic showed in the playoffs he can. He became a very good passer. He has a nice shot. Just like Ekblad, they put the puck on the net. So, yes, top 10 defenseman. I top 10 defense? I believe they can be top 10 defense.
Harvey Fialkov is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Florida Panthers offseason. Harvey, another one of the big signings was James Reimer. He gets a multi-year deal with the Florida Panthers. What sort of split do you see Luongo and Reimer having in terms of games played this year? Is it going to be sort of 50-30 for Luongo, or do you think that it's going to be or is it going to be more significant than that?
Yeah, no. I believe it's going to be 45-35, 47-35, something like that.
Sure.
Lou seemed very happy. He spoke to George the other day, and I was going to get him this week, but he's he come off hip surgery, about 37-ish coming up, so he wants to win a cup, and he looked a little bit tired in the playoffs. The second half, his numbers went down in the second half. All-star first half, not as consistent in the second half. So I think Lou will be very happy with a 45-35 split.
Harvey, you mentioned Jaromír Jágr earlier, and he, of course, led the Panthers in scoring this past season, but he's going to turn 45 during this season, and he certainly slowed down in the playoffs. As you mentioned, the Panthers got knocked out in the first round. It was very disappointing coming off winning that Atlantic division. Is his role going to change at all this year, or is he still going to be counted on to provide that primary offense?
Hey, he's your top-line winger, man. I mean, the guy, they were dominant with the puck. They the possession times, the Corsi, the Fenwick, whatever you want to say, analytically wise, they own the puck when they're on the ice. In the playoffs, it got a little physical. I think he got hurt in that first game, checked to the board. I think Jágr, there's no reason to see any slowdown. He didn't show it last year, and he played back-to-back games. I think Gallant has to put his foot down and not play him in some second games of back-to-back. Jágr insists that he plays better when he plays every day, but that's just his ego talking. He never admits injury, never admits weakness or fatigue. So I believe there's no reason to think there's going to be a major fall-off. But listen, Father Time beats everybody, even me. I can't get the drop shots I used to get. So I think Jágr, God bless him. I hope he'll get that muscle pull that a lot of us 40-somethings get. I just pull for him. He's a miracle on ice and just a great, great guy to cover, too. He's such a pleasure to deal with. He's so funny and honest. And I just hope he goes forever.
Harvey, is it true that you recently beat Steve Warrior in a tennis match?
Steve's got to work on that serve, man. He can't get that serve in the box. He's got a big bomb when he gets it in, but until he develops some consistency in his game, he's not going to take out hard. I'm too consistent, especially on the clay.
There you go, Harvey. We'll let you get onto the tennis court, get that topspin lob working. Harvey Fialkov of the Sun Sentinel newspaper in the Miami area. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Take care, Harvey. Thanks very much. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. A number of veterans signed contracts throughout the league. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
I'm ready for it.
7 seconds left. Here's Giordano. Up front. Loose puck is there. Yuri Hutner has tied the game. 1.2 to go.
Back when he was a member of the Calgary Flames, Yuri Hutner scoring. Signs earlier this week with the Dallas Stars. It's a one-year, $2 million contract. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Still time to hit the links. Still probably another month or 6 weeks left in the golf season, God willing. No better place to play than at Bell Acres or Clear Lake. Be sure to check them out online, bellacres.com, for a fabulous round of golf. Or if you're up in the Riding Mountain National Park area, no better golf course. Beautiful scenery, the whole nine yards at Clear Lake Golf Course. So you can check both of those fine 18-hole golf courses out. You going to hit the links this weekend there, Ez?
I don't know if I'm going to be able to hit the links this weekend. But
You're actually going to go punch some sausage links after the show is what you're going
to
do.
Well, I definitely want to get some more rounds in.
Oh, okay.
I'm of the belief that you golf until there's snow on the ground.
Sure. Most people would.
So
not
I'm going to be on the golf course.
Most people would say that they're not going to golf when there's snow on the ground.
Right. So I mean, for me, I'm going to be golfing at Bell Acres or Clear Lake like well into October,
really?
Like late October.
Well, and if it doesn't snow until you know mid December, you're going to be out there.
Yep.
Okay. Fair enough. It's your diehard.
Yep.
It's good to see. Anyways, as he mentioned that there's a number of signings throughout the NHL. Let's start with the Jiří Hudler signing. He gets 1 year and $2 million with the Dallas Stars.
Great signing.
It's a great signing. I mean,
Speaking of the Florida Panthers.
Sure. Formerly of the Panthers. He, of course, was traded from the Flames to the Panthers last year. Things didn't work out very well in Florida. Goes to Dallas. Dallas is a team that plays a offensive style.
It's the best offensive team in the league.
Probably.
With maybe the exception of Washington.
And they sign a guy who's known for his offense. I mean, you know, Hudler's not giving him much on the defensive side, but he still had 46 points in 72 games last year. The year before, he was absolutely fantastic for the Calgary Flames. Nothing about the signing that I don't like for the Dallas Stars.
Well, you know, you mentioned he doesn't give up much or doesn't give much on the defensive side. He's still a responsible player, Drew, defensively. I'm not saying that he's necessarily going to be their top penalty killer, but he's a guy that you can play in a third-line role and be comfortable with all of his experience. But you're right. He's more of an offensive-minded player. He's only 2 years removed from a 70-plus point season, right?
He was almost a point a game. He was 78 games played, 76 points
right.
2 years ago.
On this team, he's probably going to play on the third line just because you have so much talent there in the top six. So I imagine he's probably going to slot in there maybe on the third line with a guy like Cody Eakin, who's their third line center. Mm-hmm. So to have a guy like Jiří Hudler, who on some teams might play a top six role, he's going to play a bottom six role on the third line. But if he can chip in 20 goals, 40 points, you're happy because you've only paid him $2 million a year on a one-year deal. So it's a fantastic contract. I really like what Jim Neal has done this offseason. He, of course, signs Dan Hamhuis. He becomes your top left-side defenseman to play most likely with John Klingberg. The defense, I don't think, is necessarily a top five, top 10 defense in the NHL, but they're hoping a guy like Esa Lindell develops this year. They're hoping that Patrick Nemeth plays a bigger role with their team this year. So it's still a good young defense.
Yeah.
But certainly when it comes to forwards, and sure, they've got to sign Valerie Nichushkin, Drew.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about Seguin and Benn and Sharp, yeah. Spezza, Matthias Janmark is an underrated forward. This team has the best offense. And I don't care about the metrics or the stats or anything like that. This team can score five or six goals a night. And the goaltending is...
Unfortunately, the problem is they
right.
might give up seven or
well,
eight.
That's the issue. Yeah. I mean, Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi have to be better this year.
Yeah, and the Dallas Stars at... You know, regardless of what they're going to be, and they're going to be a playoff team, I would expect, because
well, they might win the division.
Yeah, well, they won the division last year, and there's no reason to think that they couldn't do it again, given that their offense has been upgraded over last season. I don't think there's been really any drop-offs, and their defense is, you know, their defense is their defense, and the goaltending is the problem. So let's say they replicate what they do last year. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch on a nightly basis, because that's going to be a team that moves the puck, that's going to be a team that
yep.
is up-tempo, that's going to be a team... I mean, they were first in the NHL in goals per game last year at 3.26. You can't take penalties against them because they're going to kill you on the power play. Unfortunately for the Jets, you see them five or six times a year. But Jiří
Hudler... Did you have that number in front of you, or did you just remember that, 3.26?
I had it in front of me.
Okay.
It's called research.
Well, if that number was off by... heart, then I would be a little bit concerned.
Well, it's research. I mean, you know, you got to have the stats available, you know, a drop of a hat, snap, 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 snap. You got to have the stats available to
it's
you.
All in my brain, Drew.
I know, and that's probably why we're in a lot of trouble on this
yeah,
program.
It's also true.
Yeah. Anyways, Jiří Hudler fits in seamlessly, I think, with the Dallas Stars. I mean, if anybody in their top six is struggling and Hudler's going, you bump him up, you bring him down, whatever it is, it's another piece for Jim Neal. It's another piece for Lindy Ruff to use. You know, 1 year, $2 million. I can see that being one of the signings of the summer when we look back a couple of months from now and say, you know, what has worked out? That
right.
one I could see working out.
And I know we have to get to other signings here, but when you're talking about
yeah, we
Jiří
don't have to. We can do what we want.
Well, when it comes to a guy like Jiří Hudler, too, I mean, you're thinking playoffs. I mean, we just talked to Harvey, and Florida's in a win-now mode. Dallas is obviously in a win-now mode. He's a guy that you know... especially when it comes into the playoffs, he's going to give you secondary scoring, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work out with him in Florida. I don't think he had a goal in six games for Florida. But certainly he's a guy, as you mentioned, he can play up and down the lineup. If they need him to be elevated into a top six role, most likely it's going to be on the third line. Mm-hmm. But needless to say, he's a good veteran player who's still got quite a bit of gas left in the tank as far as I'm concerned.
Brandon Peary of the New York Rangers gets a one-year, $1.1 million contract. You know, for a young guy who is certainly, he can certainly score. I mean, he had 22 goals 2 years ago. He had 14 last year in 61 games. You know, he's a guy who can put the puck in the net, and that's always the hardest thing to do in the NHL. Again, there's no risk for 1 year, $1.1 million. It adds to the Rangers' depth and move pieces around. It gets more flexibility for Alain Vigneault.
Right, and, you know, Brandon Peary's had that one good year, but he was playing at times with Alexander Barkov on Florida's top line. So Brandon Peary had that one good year. I've never been a huge fan of Brandon Peary's game.
Sure.
He's a streaky goal scorer, and he doesn't bring much to the table as far as offense goes. So I think as far as the New York Rangers are concerned, I mean, we know they just signed Jimmy Vesey, right? Mm-hmm. And they've already got a lot of guys that can put the puck in the net. They're hoping that a guy like Brandon Peary maybe catches fire and gives them some offense on the third or fourth line. But certainly I don't think that move has as much of an impact, for example, on Jimmy Vesey. But at the end of the day, when you're talking about a team like the New York Rangers, Drew, both Ryan McDonagh and Dan Girardi had off years,
yeah,
injury problems, and they weren't as good as they could be. Mark Stahl was their best defenseman last year. So as far as I'm concerned, the Rangers, their ultimate success, I think they'll be a playoff team, but ultimately, if they don't return to those punishing defensive-style games, then they're not going to go far in the playoffs. If you remember when they went to the finals against the LA Kings, you had to fight for every inch on the ice against the New York Rangers, and I think, quite frankly, last year, they weren't as hard of a team to play against.
Sure. This happened a couple weeks ago now. The Anaheim Ducks signed Antoine Vermette to a two-year, $3.5 million contract. This is after he had been bought out by the Arizona Coyotes. He sticks around in the Pacific Division to play with an Anaheim team that, you know, does expect to be back in the race for the Western Conference Championship after a bit of a down season last year. They expect to be right back in it. Your thoughts on Vermette with the Ducks, Ezzy?
Well, again, still a guy, he gets bought out, as you mentioned, by the Arizona Coyotes. He's a guy that came back to Arizona after winning the Cup, but he's a guy that gives them that bottom six depth again. And a guy like Nate Thompson has some injury problems. They haven't re-signed Rickard Rakell, who was very good as their third-line center. So a guy like Antoine Vermette gives them a veteran presence on that third line, a guy that he might not put up the same numbers that he did 6 or 7 years ago,
mm-hmm,
but he's still a serviceable NHL forward. I still think he was pretty good for the Arizona Coyotes last year. He just made too much money with all – it's a youth movement in Arizona, right? So they needed that room to sign other players, and they're going in a different direction. But certainly a good signing for the Ducks. I mean, that Ducks team, they might have gone out quietly in the first round of the playoffs, but that's still a stacked team.
Are you surprised he got 2 years? This guy, you know, usually you see a guy get bought out. He's lucky to get a one-year deal after that.
Not surprised, Drew, because it's possibly his last NHL contract. His next NHL contract might be 1 year, or he might not get one at his age. So I'm not surprised that he'd go for 2 years. And quite frankly, I think the Anaheim Ducks like him enough that they weren't really hesitant to give him that extra year.
Well, it's sort of an interesting contract. He has a full no-move clause in 2016, which expires just after the season ends on June 16th. And then it turns into a full no-trade clause, meaning he is going to be eligible to be unprotected in the expansion draft for Las Vegas. Would not be surprised if Las Vegas sees him as a potential captain for, you know, 1 year as maybe a veteran presence
lead them in. Let's not get too excited. I mean, we don't know who else
Anaheim.
Las Vegas is going to take. So before you anoint him as the captain of the Desert Knights.
No, but
sure, he could be when you're talking about the Ducks and they're going to protect the Getzlaffs and the Perrys and the Kesslers, and they're going to protect, well, they'd like to probably protect 5 or 6 defensemen,
sure,
but they've certainly got one of the best young decors. So the Ducks are not going to have a shortage of guys that they're going to protect. So, sure, Antoine Vermette might be one of those guys that isn't protected.
We will see one last signing. Radim Verbata returns to Arizona, gets 1 year and $1 million with the Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah, and again, I mean, this is a guy that was making north of $4 million, $5 million a year with the Vancouver Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly a guy that can still score at the NHL level. And again, with the Arizona Coyotes and all the young players they have there, Domi, Duclair, Dylan Strome, and Lawson Crouse, maybe as early as this season, Radim Verbat is a guy that they're familiar with, and even though he might not be a 40-goal scorer anymore, he's still a guy that has offensive ability. So
same thing just like Yuri Hudler. 2 years ago, he was just under, you know, he was a 63-point guy. He scored 30 goals 2 years ago. If the Coyotes can get 20 goals out of him for $1 million, it's well worth their investment.
He'll play a top-six role on that team.
Sure. I mean, he very well. And again, it insulates the young players again by giving them a veteran presence, which, you know, I think a lot of teams are maybe putting some value on at least having some more depth, more veteran presence when these young players are trying to crack into the lineup. When we come back, Aaron Portsline of Columbus Dispatch joins us to talk about the offseason in Columbus. Give us some insight into new Colorado Avalanche head coach Jared Bednar. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
We're back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Shortly after 10:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here in Winnipeg. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Aaron Portsline. Aaron covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, good morning. How's the summer been?
Oh, good morning. It's been, you know, long.
Yeah.
Somewhat adventurous. But yeah, it feels like it's, doesn't feel like it today. It's about 90 degrees and really humid here, but it, ice is going in for USA training camp at Nationwide, and the radio shows are starting to pick up, so it's starting to feel like hockey's right around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. So, you mentioned that the USA training camp is going to take place in Columbus. You know, right. Because the training camp's going to be there, is there more of a buzz maybe, in Columbus for the World Cup of Hockey than there are in a lot of the other cities? Which, I mean, from my perspective here in Winnipeg, it's pretty much it's ignored right now. In Columbus, is there a little bit more of a buzz maybe going to be created?
I don't know about right now. Maybe in a week or so. I mean, camp is such a it's great that it's here,
mm-hmm.
And I think people here are. Proud that, you know, for the second straight time, the USA has picked Columbus as the place and the facilities that they like to train. That's cool. It says something about you. But as a fan, I mean, the game on the 9th is going to be great. The exhibition game Canada and U.S. is going to be great. I think there's a growing buzz about that. But, you know, the camp itself is one of those things that, boy, it sounds great in July, and then you get there and you start watching drills, and you're like, okay, let's go get some ice cream.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the exhibition games, I think it's coming in on people's radar, but the camp is sort of like a nice thing that happens and not much beyond.
Yeah, right now it's Ohio State football getting set to get underway in the next week
or
so. Aaron Portsline joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Aaron, going to have you on to talk about the Blue Jackets offseason. Before we get to that, of course, Jared Bednar was hired by the Colorado Avalanche.
Yep.
This is a guy you're familiar with, given that he was the head coach of the Lake Erie Monsters, now the Cleveland Monsters, the Blue Jackets AHL franchise. You know, obviously successful. They won the Calder Cup last season. You know, what can you tell us about Jared Bednar as a head coach? And say, how highly was he thought of by Jarmo Kekäläinen and the Blue Jackets brain trust?
Yeah, well, I mean, he coached the AHL team in Peoria when John Davidson and Jarmo Kekäläinen were with the Blues, and Peoria was their AHL team. And they brought him here, which should tell you how highly they thought of him right there. They brought him here as an assistant, and then he moved up to become the head coach when Brad Larsen was promoted to Columbus. They love the guy. I think he's a really... really good X's and O's coach. It's the temperament that they love about the guy, too. And let's not kid ourselves. Colorado, you know, you talk about teams going from good cop to bad cop.
Mm-hmm.
I think the temperament of Jared Bednar, on the whole, is a much more even keel than Patrick Waugh has ever been accused of. very, very much a player's coach. but kind of in the new hybrid mold where, yes, he played the game. I don't think anybody remembers his career necessarily. The players wouldn't know his career. But he's very much a player's coach in the sense that he's on par with the players, relates very well with the players. But there is that gear where if things aren't going well, he can get nasty and make demands. And that's what everybody in Cleveland said. You know, I think one of the things that really had to impress Colorado and it impressed Columbus is he had players like Sonny Milano, highly skilled offensive players. He had Sonny Milano buying in and playing two-way hockey at the end there in Cleveland. And that team was an absolute buzzsaw at the end. And, you know, whoever wins the Calder Cup, that coach is an NHL candidate. I think Bednar is seen as a rising star throughout the hockey world.
Aaron, was Blue Jackets GM Jarmo Kekäläinen, was he cooperative during this whole process? And who would be your guess for Jared Bednar's replacement as head coach of Cleveland?
Yeah, to the first part, yes, he was. It's an awkward time, for sure, to be looking for an AHL coach. So, you know, that's Kekäläinen, like a lot of GMs, has a longstanding policy that you don't stand in the way of one of your guys getting a promotion. This is what we do for a living. No one stood in Jarmo Kekäläinen's way in Finland when he wanted to become GM of the Blue Jackets. This is how it works. So you let him go. But it does strain the patience of that policy, if you will, to be now looking for an AHL coach as early September is right around the corner. They want to have that coach in place for the Traverse City Prospects Tournament, which starts September 16th. So this is a pretty quick turnaround. In terms of who are the candidates, really, really tough to say. One person who is definitely going to get an interview will be Toby Peterson, who is on the staff in Cleveland, has been for the last couple of years. They just hired Steve McCarthy, former NHL player, played with Chicago, maybe a few other teams.
Mm-hmm.
He is an assistant, but first-year assistant, so not a head coaching candidate there. But there's a few guys bouncing around, and I would suspect it's going to start in earnest this week and be turned around pretty quickly.
Aaron Portsline's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Aaron covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, is about 2 months ago, give or take a few days, when the Blue Jackets raised eyebrows around the NHL, passing up on PRV and going with Pierre-Luc Dubois with their third overall pick. You know, what was it about? Was it more about the excitement that that they felt from Dubois as opposed to a negative surrounding PRV, or was it a combination of both that made them go the way of Pierre-Luc Dubois?
I honestly believe, plain and simply, they think Dubois is the better prospect. And if I may parse words, they don't care that you don't think that. They don't care that I don't think that. They don't care that people who have actually seen these guys play think that. They don't care. They think Dubois is the better player, is going to have a longer NHL career. That simple. And in a way, you respect what they did. The process of scouting, of going to all these games, of building your list, it should not be a consensus. It should not be built off of anyone else's mock draft. Certainly people who have never seen these kids play before.
Mm-hmm.
They went with what they felt was best. Certainly they know Puljujärvi. They may know Warts. Jarmo Kekäläinen, of course, is finished, just as Puljujärvi is. Bill Zito used to work at the agency that represents Puljujärvi. Maybe there's Warts there that they see. I think when they look at Dubois, though, they see no problems. They see a player that they think is going to be an absolute impact player on so many levels, leadership, competitiveness, all of these things. They just like the player better, and they're willing to take the bullets. They're willing to take the grief from people who think that they totally royally screwed this thing up. And we'll see how it goes. This is going to be a decision that is watched for a long time in Columbus and Edmonton and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, we haven't had a chance to have you on since Seth Jones signed his 6-year contract. Were you surprised when that contract was signed that Seth Jones didn't sign for 7 or 8 years? And how do the expectations change for Seth Jones now that he's had a year with the Columbus Blue Jackets and now they've committed to him long term?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Just 2 summers ago, they wouldn't give Ryan Johansson a bridge deal. Mm-hmm. They would only give him a bridge deal. They wouldn't give him a long-term. Something about Seth Jones they like more than they did with Ryan Johansson, elements of his personality and his game. 6 years seems like a long term to me, and I got to say my first thought wasn't why wasn't it 7 or 8. 6 seems like a long time. And does it lift the expectations? It does, big time. This is guys on their top hair now. There's no comfort zones. There's no fitting in him in here, hoping someone else can bring him along. He's got to be the guy now. And now this is a defensive group that 3 of the 6, the projected 6, are going to be 23 years old or younger. And Jones is in the middle of that pack. Werenski's younger. Ryan Murray is older. But those 3 guys are half of the Blue Jackets' defense. It's a green group. But Seth Jones, the excuse of being young and being green does not hold water anymore. It's time for him to be the player that he's relied on in Nashville before he got to Columbus to bring him along. He has to be that guy now that brings people along. He has to be the impact player, and absolutely the expectations go up.
Aaron Portsline is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Aaron covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, you mentioned Ryan Johansson. Of course, he was traded from Columbus to Nashville as part of the Seth Jones deal. You know, the Ryan Johansson's agent is Kurt Overhart. And of course, here in Winnipeg, we're all focused on Jacob Trouba and his negotiation with the Winnipeg Jets, given that Kurt Overhart, of course, is Jacob Trouba's agent as well. After that negotiation, in which Johansson missed NHL games, if I'm not mistaken, before finally coming to agreement, was there lingering animosity between how Overhart went about his business with the Blue Jackets organization that maybe led to that trade for Seth Jones a year or so later?
I don't think there's any question about that. I don't think there's any question that it got personal. It got public on both sides. And, you know, it I wouldn't say toxic, because they were able to be in the same room with each other. It wasn't that bad, but it was never the same again. And, you know, just like at the start of the season, maybe perhaps even on this show, we said if they get off to a slow start, Todd Richards is gone. The other thing you could say is if things don't go well, Johansson's going to blame. He's going to get the brunt of the blame, and he always did. There are certain guys, I mean, first of all, the kid's talent level is through the roof. And so there's frustration always with coaches who don't feel like a really, really blessed talent isn't pushing it to the hilt. They always wanted more out of the kid. Was it sometimes unfair, the expectations he was held to versus what other people were held to? Perhaps. It's water under the bridge at this point. But absolutely, there were lingering effects of that contract, no matter what anybody says or tells you. It was personal, and it was never the same again, even after they got the contract done.
Is it too far to say that Overhart negotiated in bad faith with the Blue Jackets, or was it just him being a very strong advocate for his client and his client's demands?
I think it totally depends on your perspective. If you're the player, you say, I love the way that this guy goes to bat for me. I love that he doesn't just take what the team gives. If you're the NHL PA, you probably respect Kurt Overhart for his strong positions. From the team's perspective, you say, why is it always an issue here? Why is the commonality in a lot of these a certain agent? That's probably fair, too. He has a way of doing things. He likes to set the standards that other agents follow. In other words, he likes to set the law that's quoted in future court cases, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Precedent.
He establishes the bar with that player. And players recognize that. They do. They recognize that this is a guy that will do this. But we also should say this. He's also Brandon Dubinsky's agent, and Dubinsky and the Blue Jackets had no trouble getting a contract done and getting it done quickly and without any drama whatsoever. So, you know, maybe we're being too harsh on the agent and the team, but yeah, there are some commonalities there.
Aaron, we've got one final question for you here, and we appreciate you coming on this morning. You mentioned Zach Werenski earlier. We know that he's not going back to the University of Michigan. He signed his entry-level deal in April. He played a few games for Lake Erie of the AHL. Are you expecting Zach Werenski to play most of the season in Columbus? And, you know, how do you think that's going to fit in? Because they still have a very young defense there with Ryan Murray and Seth Jones, who are both in their early 20s.
Yeah, I would be really surprised if Werenski doesn't play in Columbus. They haven't told him to get a place just yet, but that's the strong suggestion from management, is that this guy's going to be here. I mean, he went to the AHL. It didn't take him long to get acclimated. I know it's a huge step. I think he's going to be starting third pair and see if he takes it from there. You wonder about the physicality for a very young player, and he's thick and he's put together for a kid his age, but he's still a kid his age. The one thing that they love about him and they desperately need in Columbus is his ability to move the puck, both with passing, quick passes, sees the ice really well, but with his feet. And from watching the playoff run in the AHL, again, you don't know how this transfers to the NHL immediately, but he didn't join rushes in Cleveland. He led them. He did not look back for support, pull up, and follow. If he got the puck and had space, he just went. And they need that skill level on their blue line badly. I think he's going to be in Columbus. I think the organization expects him to be in Columbus. Nobody wants to say that yet before training camp starts and he's actually on the ice. But that is the full expectation that Werenski will be a rookie this year.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, really appreciate your time this morning. But I got to tell you, I'm still waiting for you to send me some of that Jenny's ice cream from Columbus.
You know, they've had another listeria scare. I'm not going to lie to you.
Okay, appreciate that.
Scares here. Look, read some headlines, boys. I'll send you some graters, maybe.
Okay, graters, you can send me some graders, too. I'm really willing to take whatever ice cream you want to send up.
Aaron, Drew's had enough ice cream. He should be eating kale or something.
Well, I need to send him some of mine.
Aaron, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we return, we introduce Le Burger Week at Bernstein's Deli.
On the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One final segment on this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Michael Trakos. Big thanks to Aaron Portsline. Big thanks to Harvey Fialkov for joining us earlier. In case you missed any of those, they will be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Le Burger Week begins on Thursday, September the 1st. And, of course, Bernstein's Deli, proud sponsors of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, are big participants in Le Burger Week. This is their third year. The first year they had their fantastic, my mind's gone blank. It was so good. I can't remember even what it was. It had maple syrup on it.
It was more of a breakfast.
Yeah,
burger.
It was a breakfast. It was a sausage bun. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Last year they had a turkey burger. Also fantastic.
Last year was Don't Have a Cow Man.
That's right. It was a Don't Have a Cow Man turkey burger.
Yeah.
Earlier this week, Ezzy, you sat down at Bernstein's Deli and tried the Burger Week entry for this coming Le Burger Week starting on Thursday at Bernstein's Deli. Here's the audio of you taste testing the upcoming burger at Le Burger Week at Bernstein's Deli.
All right, it's Ezra from the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're here at Bernstein's Deli on Cordon Avenue, and we're trying out the new entry for Le Burger Week. We're going to try the burger here in a second, but first I've got Aaron Bernstein here and Beth Jacob that are going to describe the burger. We'll start off with Beth, the creator of the burger. Beth, can you just summarize what the burger is all about this year, what went into it, how tasty it is, how much it's going to cost, how many I'm going to eat, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. So our burger entry this year is the Super Delicious Fried Chicken Burger. And it encompasses all of the flavors that will say are Bernstein's Deli. So it is brine chicken thigh with our corned beef spices, breaded in rye flour, so it's extra crispy and nutty. And then we have Bernstein's signature coleslaw, Elman's pickles and a special sauce of our house-made hot mustard mixed with mayo on a challah bun. And it's super delicious, super juicy. We love it. We've eaten it a bunch of times already.
And so, Beth, this burger is a little bit different than previous burgers because this is the third year that Bernstein's Deli has participated in Le Burger Week. So why was this burger chosen as opposed to the first year, which was a breakfast burger, and then last year it was the Don't Have a Cowman turkey burger? Why was this burger chosen as opposed to maybe going with a traditional beef burger or something like that?
Because who doesn't love fried chicken, really? Because it's just a super delicious. It has mass appeal. We think everyone will love it. It's only $7.50 plus taxes, so it's something that you can come and grab, and you could still hit up another restaurant for Le Burger Week, so you could go for two burgers in one night, which is the goal. And we just think everyone will love it, and it's super different. We want to have something very different every year to draw in more people.
And we should mention that we have a bit of a tasting party happening here. Your husband, John, and our friend Daniel are trying out the burger right now, and they pretty much haven't been speaking for the last 4 or 5 minutes. They're loving it here. We're going to get in Aaron Bernstein here, the owner of Bernstein's Deli. Aaron, just talk to us about what it's been like to participate in Le Burger Week for the last couple of years, because you guys finished second the first year, and tell us why this burger this year is going to finally win first place.
Well, you know, we try to do something a little different than everyone else. You see lots of these entries, and everyone's worked really hard developing their burgers. But, you know, when you have like 10 or 12 different toppings going on a sandwich, it's hard to really focus on what the sandwich is about. So we went with something done well and simple. And I think it's as juicy as any fried chicken burger you'll have anywhere. And we're really proud of it. And, you know, other years we've went with other meats. You know, we're trying to avoid the beef, which everyone uses. We're not doing like bacon or cheese or eggs because a lot of people use those toppings. You know, we just try to do our own thing, keep it simple, execute it well, something that would appeal to lots of those out there.
So I've watched John and Daniel eat the burger. So I'm going to put the phone down here for a second, Aaron.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go in and take my first bite of the super delicious fried chicken burger. You know, you're going to have to maybe just narrate or play-by-play the action here, because I'm probably not going to be speaking much for the next 30 seconds. So
All right. Here
I go. I'm going to try out the super delicious fried chicken burger from Bernstein's Deli. Make sure you come down here September 1st to 7th and try it out. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, so while he picks up the burger, I'll just mention that we're actually extending our hours all week. We'll be open until 10 p.m. every day for Burger Week. And we have our liquor license, a good selection of local beers to pair with. Okay, so he's dug in for the first bite. There's some sauce on his cheek, always a good sign. So what are the first impressions there as you chew?
Okay. Well, as you know, Aaron, Bernstein's has been a sponsor for Legal Curve for many years now. I've had a chance to try all the burgers. I have to say, this is the best burger that you've come out with. This is delicious. When you take the first bite, it's so crunchy, but the chicken is also really juicy, and then you've got the coleslaw and the pickles that are also coming in there, which are kind of complementing the burger really nicely. It's, as I said, it's extremely juicy. The challah bun is just perfect, and it's not as big as the last year's burger, which I like. I think I could probably eat two of these easily.
I think you could eat three.
Yeah, probably.
But for most people, one's plenty.
Yeah, one's going to be plenty, but if you're not the biggest person, you're definitely going to be able to eat this and not feel too full. And if you're someone who eats a lot, you're going to be able to easily eat a couple of these. So I love this. I think this is great. And you definitely know who I'm going to be voting for. So thanks for having us here at Bernstein's Deli to try the burger. And make sure you come down here and try it September 1st to 7th.
Yeah.
And I'm going to finish this burger now.
All right. Yeah. Dig in. Thanks, guys.
Well, that was the definition of ridiculous, but the Le Burger Week gets underway September 1st. How was it, Ezzy? Was that good?
You know what that was, Drew? That was riveting radio.
That was riveting radio is right. It made me hungry. I'm actually going to go to Bernstein's Deli right now. So that's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Aaron Portsline, Michael Trakos, Harvey Fialkov. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. for producer Rory doing a great job behind the board. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball this afternoon on TSN 1290.